Hey y'all, and welcome back to Uplift Fit Nutrition Radio. I'm your host, Lacey Dunn, future registered dietitian, here to spread the scientific knowledge in the world of fitness and nutrition. Today, I have guests Cliff and Katie Wilson on board, and we are going to go into some amazing topics, so get ready to learn. Let's get right on it. Hey guys, so again, thank you so much for joining me today, and we are going to hop right into this podcast. I just wanted to straight up apologize for the lack of sound quality. I lost my microphone, so I'll be getting a new one soon, but I'm going off of my headphones from here, so the sound quality might not be the best you've ever heard. I also wanted to share some exciting news. I don't know if you guys follow me on Instagram at Faith and Fit, but I just moved to Houston, Texas to start my dietetic internship in my master's degree with Texas Women's University. So I'm on my way to be a registered dietitian, and I am beyond excited and pumped, and I plan to share all the information that I learn with you guys. So let's hop right in and let's learn some things. All right, guys, today I have Cliff and Katie Wilson both together on this podcast. I'm super excited. They are such an awesome couple, and they have such extensive knowledge that could be valuable to your physique and your overall life. So why don't you guys introduce yourself, tell my listeners who you are, what you do, and then we can dive into the topics for today.
Sounds good. Well, first off, we appreciate you having us on. It's not often that Katie and I get to do something like this together, so you know, we've been looking forward to this one. So obviously, I'm Cliff. And so my primary demographic of people that I coach is bodybuilders and fitness competitors, both men and women. I'm a professional natural bodybuilder myself. And so this kind of ended up being the market that I ended up having the most success in. You know, over the years, I've been coaching full time since about early 2012. And in that time, I've been pretty lucky to work with some great athletes. I've had quite a few clients turn pro and then do well on the pro level, and a few natural world champions. So, you know, I tend to work with a very specific niche of people. And, you know, I've been fortunate enough to make my entire living off of that portion, that population of people.
And then, I'm Katie. And we got started together initially. I was not as into fitness, admittedly. He kind of pulled me in by way of prepping. And then, of course, when you live with someone that's that shredded and in exceptional shape, you usually kind of get tempted to try it yourself. So I started slowly just working out for fun. And I did eventually work as a local personal trainer. And I do miss certain aspects of that. But I now actually work exclusively online also since 2012. And at one point I kind of had a foot in both sides, a little bit related to bodybuilding and a little bit general population, but I came to realize that I just love general population a little bit more as far as what I get, you know, a little bit selfishly as a coach. I get to, you know, watch those people kind of have their own different kinds of triumphs and PRs mm-hmm. and transformations. So I still appreciate bodybuilding, and I still actually like to watch and follow a lot of friends that compete, but frankly, I pretty much just stick to, like I said, general population and really pretty much everything but bodybuilding now. And we kind of complement each other well that way.
Yeah. The funny thing I find is that we both kind of gravitated towards our natural tendencies. I tend to be, of the two of us, the more extremist, and I'm ultra competitive. So I kind of, fuels that side. And when I was a personal trainer before I started coaching online, and I was admittedly a terrible personal trainer.
that's funny you admit that.
Yeah, I was not good because I couldn't relate to my clients that just wanted to lose 10 pounds. I was always like, let's go to the extreme, let's get shredded, you know. And so, you know, it didn't always hit the target when I was working with the general population. And, you know, Katie understands that mentality of you know, just slowly improving and enjoying life a lot more than I do. So I would say we both landed where we needed to land with our coaching populations.
Yeah, you guys both make it the best of both worlds. I know it's definitely a crazy different mindset, contest prep versus lifestyle. You can't just tell a lifestyle client, you know, a mom normally who works 8 hours, 5 days a week, can't just tell her exactly to fit all this stuff in, hit those macros, do this cardio and that, and just expect it always to 110% happen. So very a good balance you guys have going.
Yeah, you know, it's I always find it I find it funny how we're so similar in so many ways but so different. But you know, that's what each of our clients needs from us is somebody that who can kind of relate to what they're trying to do.
Exactly. So let's go directly into these topics for today. And I, we already discussed this before I pressed record, but I know Katie and Cliff are going to give their different opinions and their thoughts regarding lifestyle versus more a rigid contest prep. So I would like to first talk about the importance of either a post-show diet or a post diet phase. And this is something that I know a lot of people forget about, especially with lifestyle. You know, they diet and they lost that 10 pounds that they wanted to lose, and then they kind of, you know, just go back to what they were eating prior to their diet, and it just messes things up, and people don't understand the metabolic adaptations that happen. So how do you guys deal with that, and what are your thoughts on post-diet, post-show diet phase?
I'll go first. I mean, there is definitely a lot of similarities between my clients and his. His are, of course, coming usually from a deeper caloric deficit, a lower body fat point, a body fat point which is not usually sustainable, whereas my clients, you know, it's more, you know, I do have some clients who get pretty lean, but it's not so lean that it's unsustainable. And really the biggest thing that I find, and there's different benefits to reverse dieting, like, for example, you know, we could even deviate off to you know, the amount of people that undereat 6 days a week, overeat one day. But really when it comes to just specifically after a diet, when you've gotten to the body fat or the aesthetic that you're going for and you want to figure out how to maintain that hopefully forever, what I truly find is that quite simply people, they look at that the day that they hit that goal weight like they've crossed the finish line and like it's already over. And one thing that I tell my clients, and I tell them well before they hit their goal weight because I want them to start setting those mental changing their mentality about it, is that your goal weight is, it's a goal, it's a mile marker, but it's not the finish line. You've accomplished the thing that you've been most focused on, which is the thing you can see, the thing, you know, you get to be rewarded by, you get to see those visible results. But if you don't do equally diligent work in the time on the other side of that goal point, you're probably not going to be able to maintain that physique, that aesthetic for the long term. The reason being, like I said, people see that finish line and they think, hey, I'm there, I can eat however I want. Mm-hmm. Or alternately, unfortunately, one thing that the general population is taught is that they have to keep dieting forever, or they have to keep doing excessive cardio forever to keep the weight off. And really quite similarly to competitors, if they treat that as kind of a midway point and say, okay, for the next, and I don't want to put a hard number on it because it varies for everyone, but let's just say 2-3 more months, if I continue to be just as diligent as I was during my diet, and I slowly work food up, and I slowly scale cardio back, then they get the best of both worlds. They get to maintain their new body, and they get to do so without living like they're dieting the rest of their life. And like I said, that's kind of a deep topic we could probably go off on, all sorts of offshoots on, but really when it comes to general population, there's so much misinformation, and people feel like they have to choose to either enjoy food, which who doesn't enjoy food, or enjoy their new physique. And very much so, it is possible to have both, but it takes a level of patience that I don't know everybody's necessarily ready for, because again, they think, I got to that weight, I'm done. So if you can take that time on the other end of hitting your goal weight, I can tell you people can maintain that new body on more weight than I think they even understand, or sorry, more food than they even realize.
Yeah, and I think the struggle too is the fact that there, people will follow a fad diet and then they have, you know, they feel like they're so burnt out and that they got to their goal and that they can't physically, mentally push past that and get to a point of working that metabolism up. So, and the fact that a lot of people do this on their own and they don't have a coach, you know, like you guys telling their clients what to do. So, Cliff, what do you think about post-show in regards to that?
Yeah, you know, it's pretty, it's pretty interesting when you look at people post-show, because there are two main aspects and they're not completely separate, but you have, you touched on it with metabolic adaptation, you have physiological changes that have taken place and you have psychological changes. And they're not completely independent of one another, but I always tell people you need to have a plan post-show for both. Physiologically, for those that don't know, If you are a competitor, you're pretty much a hormonal mess.
Truth.
By the end of contest prep. Now, this is largely not due to lower food intakes, but it's going to be a lot more due to body fat levels.
Yeah.
Without going too deeply into it, the body reads the fullness of body fat cells as an indicator for how healthy you are. And so, you know, regardless of your food intake, some people could be eating a pretty high amount of food, but if they keep losing body fat and their body perceives their body fat cells to be empty, it's going to push back and try to do things like reduce metabolic rate. Mm-hmm. And especially in men, they see massive testosterone drops. And the leaner you get, the more you're going to see this. So testosterone, to date, I've done a lot of hormone tests on people over the years and seen a lot. And today I have not seen a natural bodybuilder who got ultra lean for their show drop less than 65% testosterone level.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, and then not to mention cortisol increases, which is the stress hormone, usually increases around 100%.
Cortisol is such a devil too.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're usually just, you're a mess. You're a mess afterwards. So you have to realize that this isn't going to correct itself quickly. A lot of people think I'll just eat a lot to get back to where I was. But in a lot of the hormone tests that I've seen anecdotally, and there's even a few published studies, you try to rush it back. But a lot of times time is going to be the number one factor. Even people that have gone back to regular eating and gained a lot of body fat quickly after the show, usually it still takes them anywhere from 2 to 5 months to regain normal hormonal profiles.
Yeah.
So they need to realize patience is going to have to be a number one factor, like Katie talked about. Now, psychologically, another big issue is that they don't like to see their body fade away that they've worked so hard for. And they also are just wanting food. They want it all now. I'm going to use a personal example. Last year I competed in 2016. And Katie and I had been wanting to take a vacation after my contest prep. And a lot of people I see, they schedule vacations like the week after their contest. They're like, oh, it'll be a nice break after my contest to go on a vacation.
Yeah, and they'll look good. You know, they'll look good in their bikini or their swim shorts, just rocking that post-show bod.
Yeah, and they don't realize that is a trap.
Yes.
That is a trap waiting to happen. First off, physiologically, you're not going to be energetic after your show. I don't care how much you're eating. And also, once again, body fat cells being the main regulator of hunger, not even so much food intake, you can eat as much as you want, and you will probably not feel energetic, and you will probably not feel content with your food intake. And you are going to fall off the wagon hard. I believe we scheduled our vacation for around 8 to 10 weeks after my show. And I didn't even eat a meal out. Now, this isn't what everyone has to do, but I didn't even eat a meal out at a restaurant until about 6 or 7 weeks after my show.
Wow. And
like I told Katie, I viewed the post-show period almost like an extension of my contest prep. Mentally, I was prepared for this, and I would bring food up incrementally because I don't feel that a lot of people are mentally equipped post-show to go out and just wing it. We don't have the ability in the early weeks to really put the brakes on, if that makes sense. And so, people need to be aware of this. They need to go into their contest, or like Katie said, even for general population, they need to go in their diet with viewing the weeks after almost like an extension of their dieting process and how they're going to approach it with their level of diligence.
And even along those lines, hearing him say something about our vacation reminds me of a similar point when it comes to reverse dieting and everything, is that I get so many people, and really, to be honest, it's a lot of women that will say, I have a vacation and it's usually a number to less than 16 weeks. I got to get to this weight, or, you know, let's say vacation, a wedding, something like that, to where they want to diet and they have a deadline.
Yeah.
But the thing that I discourage is that, you know, that's great if you have a goal like that. But especially if it's something like your wedding, where I'm assuming you have your honeymoon in there for basically a vacation right after, or if it is an outright vacation, really, if it's an extended period of time that you're going to be traveling, that you're dieting up to, another reason I don't recommend dieting right up to the day you leave is that, very similar to what Cliff said, your metabolic rate is going to be slowed. It's going to be adapted to diet level calories. So I actually lose people that apply with me wanting to basically marathon into and crash diet into these events, because I tell them, you know, besides the fact that I'm concerned with their health and things like that, they want to lose weight at any cost. But the thing that happens is that so many people, whether they're with a coach or not, they diet into these events and they pull out all the stops when the weight isn't moving. And then they go on vacation and inevitably they go and they eat a certain way. They gain the weight back.
Yeah.
And so, oh my God, I'm dieting again a few months later. So it's a vicious cycle of crash dieting into events, panicking into these events, then paying no attention at all to calories for a week or a month. You know, maybe it's over the holidays. And it's a cycle for a lot of general population people, instead of having a little bit more of a long-term balanced and patient approach, which I know it doesn't have that immediate reward. But again, when you have that point of view of what happens to you on the other side of hitting that goal weight, you have a higher likelihood of not only not hopefully having to diet again for a while, but then really being able to enjoy yourself. So whether it's a vacation or if it's just life in general, you know, the sooner you can lose the weight, but the more time you can take to bring food up after slowly and conservatively, the higher likelihood you're not going to have to, I mean, not that you have to, but feel like you have to diet again soon.
Yeah, it almost feels like they're, like you said, I love that you said about that, you know, the marathon. It's like you have to have a halfway point and then the other goal being the continuously forever on marathon of making it a lifestyle, because it's not just that, like you said, it's not that goal that we need to reach. It's maintaining that goal and making sure we have just as much effort put into the post event or the post show that we put in that effort. And in regards to, we spoke a little bit about hormones. Yeah, I have seen even evidence that female menstrual cycles, you know, that sometimes women lose their cycles with contest prep, and it can take up to a year for those hormones to get back to normal and for your ovarian, hypothalamic ovarian axis to recognize that you have more food in your system, that you have the correct energy to sustain, you know, a pregnancy. So various different hormonal effects, and I definitely think that it needs to be talked about more, is that post-show needs to be so, like, effort needs to be put in more than just the contest prep itself. So what do you guys see in regards to other potential female factors with dieting? Because I know this is, I don't know if you guys have noticed, but it's a little bit more of an upcoming topic about female dieting and female hormones. So what do you guys see? And Katie, what do you specifically see with your lifestyle women clients?
Well, I mean, I'll let Cliff touch on it a little bit more, because I know he can go a little bit more into, like you said, it's a more emerging topic. But in general, when it comes to general population clients, I tend to try to not overcomplicate things. Mm-hmm. I try to good balance, whether it's, you know, training, nutrition, nutrient timing, just everything, of not absolutely modifying everything around every possible, I don't want to say roadblock, but variable that may or may not affect metabolic rate or progress. Same reason that I don't change calories or macros on training versus non-training days. At least for an average person, I don't feel that there's enough variation that it justifies overcomplicating the plan and giving them more things to juggle. Because frankly, at least with a lot of my clients, they're still so new to macro counting at all.
Exactly.
That is a lot of work on their part. So to give them this extra variable where they have to also, you know, keep an eye on the calendar and potentially, you know, whether it's a day-to-day or a week-to-week thing, make another modification, that just makes more work for them. And in the long run, the more work you make for a client, even if they can stick to it for a little while, the more structured plans always break down in the long run, because it's just too much work. It's not realistic to just regulate and monitor absolutely every detail from here to eternity. So my point of view always being equally on the end goal as well as sustainability of the end goal, I don't really make those recommendations for my clients.
Yeah, so. I definitely think that consistency is the biggest key. So not throwing in a bunch of random days of like high carb, low carb all the time are what is needed for a lifestyle client. Now, Cliff, I know you were about to say something and I interrupted you.
That's fine. You know, and so I guess I should start by saying, I know I realize I'm a guy on this topic, but, you know, for anybody that's followed what I've done for quite a while, A large portion of my clients are female. In fact, I have about a 50-50 ratio of male to female. And if I do consider myself being really good at one thing, it's getting female competitors to very, very lean levels. I hope I don't come off as arrogant when I say that.
No.
I'll put my female clients' conditioning up against anybody. And so, like Katie said, like you touched on, this is a pretty hot topic at the moment about adjusting energy outputs and even adjusting macronutrient ratios based on the time of the cycle. Because there is research to show that how the body will respond to intense activity or insulin sensitivity will change depending on, for example, if it's the follicular cycle or the luteal cycle. But like Katie, I'm not a big fan of micromanaging based on cycles, because the same could be said in terms of even with a male, for example. And I get some male clients that will ask me something similar where, my job is going to be a little bit more active this week because, you know, whatever job they're working, we're doing, a construction worker, we're doing a more active job. Should I increase calories for this week because I'm going to be more active? No, that's just your daily activity. I don't try to micromanage caloric intake around every little detail of a client's life. Then it becomes a slippery slope. Well, I walked to the mailbox today and I don't usually go get the mail. My wife does. So do I get two extra carbohydrates? For the most part, yes, you are going to see differences. Okay, any female will tell you, you see increases around the time of their period in terms of body weight, because you're going to see hormonal shifts that cause greater water retention. And then also you're going to have times of the month where you're going to see increases or decreases in metabolic rate. But I would say there's a couple of things that are also a slippery slope with that. You need to realize that just because the weight goes up due to water retention, I've seen a lot of female clients sort of start to take the mental approach that week's just a wash.
Yes, you know what I mean? Yes, exactly.
They're like, well, I'm not going to lose weight anyway this week. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, it becomes an excuse, kind of.
Yes, yeah. And I really try to instill into my female clients is we may see the weight go up, but I want to keep an eye on what is typical for your weight to increase. If you were seeing an increase of 3 pounds last month, I look at it for the previous month. Is it 3 pounds again? Well, then we should see that progress still. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. You have to look at it month by month instead of week by week with a female cycle.
Yeah. And even so, for example, if I still look at it week by week and I anticipate a three pound roughly gain, and I don't see that, and so I can compare it. You can still compare it to the previous week, allowing for what you consider to be a typical gain. And so you can kind of, as a coach, make a judgment call along the lines of, is this normal, and do I think that we have lost fat this week? And you can also use pictures for visual changes.
Mm-hmm.
While you may be holding a little bit of water, usually you can still see visual changes from week to week if they've lost fat.
Yeah.
So overall with that, I'm just not a big fan. Now, I'm not saying it's wrong to adjust calories based on the cycle and the phases of a woman's menstrual cycle. But I just think that if you're going to do that, then why not change it for varied activity throughout the day? And overall, like Katie said, a consistent approach over the course of week to week. I believe, especially in a process that is so mentally taxing, it will lead to better results if you just remain consistent and realize, as a coach, when you're trying to make changes, there will be ups and downs along the way. You do need to take that in consideration. Now, there are times of the month when women will have greater increases for sugar based on their hormone fluctuations. So I do think that sometimes this is where I think flexible dieting becomes a healthy tool, because if you're craving sugar, you can work that into your macros and not go off on some binge because you're trying to force yourself to eat sweet potatoes and broccoli every meal.
Yeah, it might be a good time for a refeed then.
Yeah. So I think Katie and I both take the same approach in that if you try to adjust everything week by week, you're almost going to end up making it harder to gauge process progress, because if you're increasing calories, if you're increasing calories based on certain times of the month or increasing the macronutrient ratio, you are going to see massive weight fluctuations that are not due to the cycle, but due to greater glycogen storage from the carbohydrates you're taking in. So then you start complicating it with an immense number of variables that become an even harder to track progress from week to week.
Oh yeah, I so agree. And it's crazy that the body can switch the utilization of fatty acids versus carbohydrates for energy. But I don't think that's a huge factor we even need to worry about. It would be what, like probably even 1% could affect your body. So it's much better to stick to the consistency in a regular macro diet instead of using the menstrual cycle in regards to the diet plus programming. I'm seeing a lot of days, you know, even now, people try and do their programming based on the menstrual cycle. And I'm like, that just becomes an excuse. So just work hard in the gym every single time you're in there. Follow your normal progressive overload and your normal deload instead of trying to micromanage and manipulate your monthly cycle.
Yes, you absolutely nailed it. You really did. And another thing I guess I will say, as somebody who does work with a lot of both male and female clients, and Katie can attest to this, so for all the women listening out there, sorry ladies, but I think another big trouble, because I have a lot of husband and wife couples that I coach, and I think also women need to realize that pound for pound, if you have 140 pound male and 140 pound female, the female just won't be able to eat as much as the male.
No.
We're gonna try.
Yeah, we will.
Well, and you know, I do think Katie and I talk about this. I do think that's the downfall of a lot of women when it comes to their meals out. You know, they go out for a meal with their husband, and they try to, you know, eat mindfully. They try to estimate their macros, but a lot of times they're sort of influenced by what their husband is eating. They're thinking, well, he's eating this much, and they try to sort of. I mean, you know, sort of, I don't want to use the word keep up, but you know what I mean? Like,
we're competitive. Women are competitive.
Yeah. You know, like they try to keep up, and unfortunately, you know, life isn't fair, and and women just can't usually eat quite as much.
I feel like
guys.
This is very directed at me.
Yeah. Okay. Katie's always trying to match me slice for slice when we get pizza.
You know, okay, I will admit, I am much more mature now, but in my early lifting years, when I was doing that typical justification of, I'm working out now. I need these calories. Yeah.
Gains.
Pictures. If some of these people have been following me for a while, they've seen them. I call them the pizza Chinese phase, because it was a time when we discovered we had a Chinese food place nearby and a pizza place nearby, and we rationalized our junk food back then. We were young. We were bulking.
The bulk life.
But I do think it's important that, you know, women realize that their metabolic capacity is not going to be quite what a guy's is, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately. Oh, the downside of being a woman. Okay, yeah. So I also wanted to go into nutrient timing and how we can manipulate our food for feeling our best while looking our best. So what are your thoughts on nutrient timing? I know some people are all about, you know, nutrient timing doesn't matter. And then there's the people that micromanage nutrient timing. And I would say I'm probably in the middle of it, especially nowadays, now that I've done a little bit more research on insulin sensitivity and such. So what would be your suggestions for your clients on nutrient timing?
I'll start with myself, I guess. I'd say a pretty middle of the kind of approach. You know, you can look all you want at what's been proven to give a little boost here, a little boost there, but once again, kind of like when we talked about, you know, managing around your cycle, I'm concerned with, you know, if something gives a slight edge, of course I'll suggest it to a client, but really ultimately not only what's going to benefit them for their short-term goal, which is usually fat loss, but what's going to be sustainable for the long term. So I always emphasize to my clients that at the end of the day, the most important thing is consistency day to day, because
Yeah.
I'd say almost every single person that applies with me, because I actually require that they track their current habits for a week, that they not change them, but they track them. The average person that applies with me is so inconsistent. I would say 1,000 to a 1,500 calorie difference over the course of the week in terms of their lowest day and their highest day. So I'm just concerned with teaching these people the value of consistency, of awareness of what they're doing. Beyond that, I do give my clients what I emphasize is suggested nutrient timing, which is really, for the most part, making sure they're eating their protein spread over the day instead mm-hmm. of one large meal. As a client gets, you know, to the end of their diet where calories are a little bit more of a commodity, you know, they're getting lower carb, they're more tired, things like that, because although I don't push my clients or need to push my clients' calories as low as, you know, most of Cliff's, of course, there's some people that have to dig deep. At that point, I try to emphasize, you know, especially pre and post-workout so that they can recover and so that they're not just totally dragging in the gym, paying a little bit more attention to, you know, timing carbs around that. But other than that, for the most part, I just try to tell my clients here, I'm going to tell you what science says is the most optimal, but try to find a balance between that and what you're going to be happy to sustain for the rest of your life. Because, you know, the biggest thing I find for average people is times of day they fear eating. Like, they fear eating before workout. You know, they want to fast. They feel like they shouldn't be eating, that when they go to the gym, they should be starving. And similarly, at night, they've been told, you don't, oh, the sun's down, don't eat. Even if you're going to work till 2 a.m., you should not be eating after 6.
You're going to get fat.
Yeah, exactly. Your body knows. So really, I just try to find a middle ground between science and, you know, sustainability.
Yeah, I agree. I'm in total amen to that, because some people will try and micromanage every single detail, and there's no reason to. If you don't want to eat right before you work out, you don't have to eat right before you work out. Like, you can wait a few hours. Just make sure what you're doing is something you can stick to. So, Cliff, what are your thoughts?
Yeah. Now, keep in mind, I work with bodybuilders.
Who yes. are, so, a lot more intense.
Oftentimes, the most neurotic, anal, like, group you're ever going to deal with. Like, if they go, you know, 5 minutes over their set meal time, they're like, oh, my God, I'm wasting away to nothing. So it's now bodybuilders often have a misunderstanding of what effective nutrient timing looks like. They think that they have to eat every 3 hours. And like you said, the science on this, or the prevailing thought in the industry, has shifted quite a bit over the last few years. Now, a lot of bodybuilders think they have to eat every 3 hours or they're going to start losing muscle, and they have to eat every 2 or 3 hours or they're, you know, to keep the quote metabolic furnace burning, where both of those are pretty much nonsense. So, you know, I think with my clients, now I'm going to say that even within the bodybuilding community, there's a distinct difference between bodybuilders that want to just have fun with this and bodybuilders that want to absolutely make the most of everything they can. So I generally work with clients that are in the second group, where while they do have fun with this, they want to seize every little opportunity. So mm-hmm. I think people need to realize that for the general population, like Katie said, I don't think nutrient timing is all that important, because it's only going to make a 1 to 2% difference likely. But for a bodybuilder over the course of years, that's going to be an important 1 to 2% difference. And so a big factor is performance. You know, you eat to perform. So with my clients, I do give nutrient timing recommendations. And I always tell my clients that these are general guidelines rather than hard rules. I give a range of how many meals I'd like them to eat per day, usually 4 to 6 meals, because that'll give you the best, the optimal range of how many protein synthesis spikes you should see during the day. And then also I give some guidelines for roughly how many carbs I'd like to see them eat a few hours before their training session, because especially when you're dieting, a dieting bodybuilder in particular, energy is at a higher premium when you're cutting down. You need to make sure that you have glucose available for training. And then I will usually put some sort of faster digesting carbohydrate during the training session. And then I'll follow it up with a meal post-training, or a protein shake, usually post-training, and then a meal after that. And then this may shock some people. Besides for pre-training, I actually put the highest amount of carbohydrates usually before bed, which is, blasphemous. Look out. A lot of people are like, oh, carbs at bed. No. But there actually is some research to show that people that eat a higher percentage of their carbohydrates at night before bed may lose fat a little bit faster. Now, they didn't really delve into why that happened in this particular study, but my guess is that it has a lot to do with sleep quality.
Yes, yeah. People forget about how carbs can help with sleep and managing your cortisol levels. So.
Oh, yeah, and serotonin levels. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think we've all been there where you eat way too much pasta and then you start to feel sleepy. And so, you know, and especially for dieting bodybuilders or anybody dieting in general, I think we've all had that feeling where you know, you're like, you eat your last meal for the day and you're like, oh, I'm still hungry.
Yeah. You're like, great, water.
Yeah. You can't sleep because you're hungry. And so a lot of times I put the second largest carb meal of the day for my clients will be immediately before bed. They sleep better. They're better, more well rested due to not just more sleep, but usually a higher quality sleep. And then, of course, that's going to lead to better recovery and then better training the next day. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these are the type of things that I really have found, not just, you know, scientifically show to matter, but, you know, I've seen it over and over. I've played with a lot of different meal timings over the years with my clients. And, you know, carbohydrates, pre-training, protein spread throughout the day, and then carbohydrates before bed just makes such a big difference in the way people set up their day. Perform, recover, and it's just kind of a repeating cycle.
Yeah, and people forget sometimes who aren't, you know, marathon runners or specific strength athletes. They forget the fact that food plays or can play such a role in recovery. So that's why I at least try and tell my clients to make sure that they have that pre and their post-workout meal to have good carbohydrates, good protein sources to be able to perform and to be able to recover. I put less emphasis on that for lifestyle clients, but for contest prep, definitely if you're, you know, working hard at the gym, you have your maybe your intense cardio session, you're going to want that fuel to recover for your workouts.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and I also think that this is, it's such an individual thing based on your schedule, because if you're training in the morning as opposed to at night, things are just going to look way different. I think it's also important to note, you know, for some people, if they wake up right first thing in the morning, they may not feel like, putting down a bunch of potatoes or, you know, has some heavy oatmeal in the morning because they're getting to go off and train in 20 minutes or so. So even things like, you know, this is where it kind of falls in the nutrient timing, but also kind of the, if it fits your macros, flexible dieting approach. But, you know, that might be the time for some more sugary carbs, you know, like a protein shake and some like Fruity Pebbles or something along those.
Yes, Fruity Pebbles.
Yeah, because they sit lightly in your stomach. You know, I challenge anybody to find that they could ever get full from Fruity Pebbles.
Challenge accepted. because
she's going to put down two boxes and still be hungry.
And Fruity Pebbles go down like water.
Yeah.
So, you know, those are the times where I think that an individualized approach can mean a lot. You know, people will say, well, I don't like eating carbohydrates before my workout. And I'm like, well, maybe you're eating the wrong type of carbohydrates because they're sitting so heavy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's where you kind of get into a timing. And you have to narrow down specifics in terms of the types of foods.
Yeah, it always comes down to looking at what a client is eating too, in regards to how they're feeling. So Definitely, I think it's individualized for sure. Now, I know you said something about intracarbs, and that's highly interesting because I tried to volunteer for a study on carb-10, so cyclin dextrin, and its effects on performance. So what do you see its effects on body composition in a diet phase? Because I know I specifically was listening to TNT and also looking at the other research studies, and it is definitely potentially an upcoming product to be utilized in training. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, do you use any for your clients?
No, I actually do not.
Okay. So I do tend to use highly branched cyclic dextrin for a lot of my clients. Sometimes I'll use just a pure dextrose. But I do like intracarbs, and it's kind of funny because, like you said, trends just change.
They do.
When I first started coaching, I used intra workout carbs, and everyone's like, "Yeah, intra workout carbs, good. That's good stuff." And then a few years ago, everyone's like, "No, intra workout carbs don't make a difference. What are you doing? I'd rather have people eat their carbs." And now it's kind of swinging back the other way, where everyone's all on board with the intra workout carbs. Now, one of the biggest issues is that if somebody is well fed with full glycogen stores, intra-workout carbs may or may not make a difference. So obviously from an energy standpoint, if you have full glycogen stores in the heart of your off season, it's probably not going to be an energy issue, but I do think that having carbohydrates coming in, maybe a little bit of some raised insulin levels might have a protective effect on muscle tissue. So I'm not talking about 50 or 60 grams of carbohydrates. Often, 10 to 30 grams.
Mm-hmm, just a little bit.
Yeah, you don't need a lot. And then another factor is that when you're dieting, then energy, like I said before, is at a high premium. It's in short supply. So, some people say, "Well, I'd rather eat my carbs." And it's like, well, yes, this may be one of the sacrifices you have to make. But while glycogen largely stays put once it is stored, it does get robbed slowly from activity over the course of the day. So, if we eat carbohydrates earlier in the morning, some of that glucose will be used up in our daily activities. And so would you rather use that glucose to be, like I said, walking to go get the mail and taking the dogs out and, washing the dishes? Or would you rather use that glucose to be in your bloodstream at the time you're training to help you keep your strength up while you're trying to diet down and preserve as much muscle tissue as possible?
Yeah.
So, it may be a small difference, but once again, it's one of those things that adds up over the course of time and can equal out to something significant. Now, I know that Katie's talked about this before with her clients asking her about intra-workout carbs, and she usually has a good reasoning for telling them it's probably not the best thing what they're going to want for their goals, but I guess it can kind of change from person to person.
Again, keeping in mind the average person doesn't need to care about every little minute bit of not that they don't value performance, but again, their body fat and their calories aren't usually getting so low to where they have to use that as such a precious commodity. And honestly, the average person, not that they're not mentally tough, but let's face it, there's a reason the average person doesn't dive right into contest prep, because other similarities to contest prep diets and a regular diet, it's hard. The mentality you go through, the hormonal changes, the body, the lower body fat, the way that affects you. So the more sustainable diet is usually the one that you can enjoy the most. Even if you have to get down to 100 carbs a day, what diet is going to be more easy to stick to and stick out? A diet where you have to devote 20 or 30 carbs to liquid that is gone in about 2 seconds, or one where you get to at least know that you get to go home and eat that 20 or 30 carbs. So I'm always a huge advocate for not drinking all your food. Obviously shakes is a different category, but when it comes to carbs and when it comes to enjoyable food volume, and this applies to me as well. I enjoy eating my food.
Me too. I would rather eat my bowl of oats.
Yeah. So, the more you can just enjoy your diet, even if it is a diet, even if it is restricted to low carbs at the time, the more you're going to be able to stick it out and get all the way to the end. Yeah.
Yeah. Sustainability wise, I definitely think it's better to stick to what you can stick to. And hopefully more research will be coming out on intracarbs and we can potentially see the benefits there. So that concludes my questions. I don't know if you guys had any last words you wanted to tell my listeners, maybe about where they can reach you, your website, your IG handles. That would be fantastic. And thank you guys so much again for taking your time to come on this podcast. You guys are just filled with so much knowledge, and I definitely know that my listeners have learned something from you guys. So again, why don't you guys just say where they can come reach you?
Oh, thank you so much also for having us, because I mean, an opportunity like this to talk to new people and reach out to new people. You know, it's a time where there's a lot of great information out there, but it's just a matter of, you know, finding the right information, whether it's via podcast or someone to follow. So I'm always really excited to connect with like-minded people, people that are focusing more on science than, of course, not at all scientific. But yeah, people wanted to follow me or reach out to me. I'm pretty much use the same handle across everything. KittyWilsonFitness.com is my website. Kitty Wilson Fitness is my handle on Instagram, which is where I pretty much post everything. I'm not cool. I don't use Twitter. I have no idea how to use it. And then you can also find my email and everything through my Instagram.
Perfect. And what about you, Cliff?
Yeah, people can find me on Facebook if you just search my name. And then on Instagram, I'm at CW Team Wilson. And then my website is teamwilsonbb.com. And they can, you know, get a hold of me through my website and see all the client pictures and all that good stuff. And, you know, pretty much just through any social media outlet, they can get a hold of me.
Perfect. I know I've seen a couple people who have worked with Katie, and then some friends of BE Science also work with Cliff, as well as Lauren Conlin, who I absolutely adore now. So definitely these two people are people I trust to have your health in their hands. So if you need them, if you want them, reach out to them. Thank you guys so much again, and I hope you guys have such a fantastic night.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye, guys.